Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, July 23rd. I'm Josh Landes. Today on the show, Fred Breglia. Did I get that right?
You nailed it.
Fred says I nailed it. That's great. And Delilah Riggs. Fred is, of course, at the Landes Arboretum. Delilah is of the Berry Patch, which I can attest makes a heck of a berry. You're going to call into 1-800-348-2551 to get on the program and ask questions to Fred and Delilah. It's a popular program. Folks, we have emails coming in already. You're going to want to get your calls in early. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But that number again, 1-800-348-2551. Fred, Delilah, me, Josh, your gardening calls. All today on Vox Pop. Folks, you're not going to want to miss it. But first, the news. Good afternoon. Hello again. It's me, Josh Landes. You're listening to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. We've got a barn burner today, though, of course, in your line of work, that would probably be a worst-case scenario. We've got the gardeners in-house, the great Fred Breglia, director of the Landes Arboretum in Esperance, New York. And let me finally address this. Josh Landes has no association with the Landes Arboretum.
It's pretty close.
Yeah, there's a little. I always wonder if someone out there thinks I'm also growing trees. And the great Delilah Riggs, the owner and operator of the Berry Patch, a first-generation diversified farm in Steventown, New York. Thank you so much, both, for being on today.
And thanks for having
us,
Josh.
Love to do it.
Well, our listeners are very excited. Listen, the calls are pouring in. You can join the gardening madness here. 1-800-348-2551. That's 1-800-348-2551. And, of course, you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. All right, gardeners, let's get right to a call. What do you say?
Sure.
Sounds good.
Fantastic. All right, first off, we have Jane in Livingston Manor. And she has a question about Japanese beetles and basil. All right, Jane, you're on the show. What is your question for our gardeners today?
Okay, I have two quick questions. One is, in my raised bed garden, every morning I go out and they're my basil stalks. Somebody is like cutting through them and leaving all the remains there. It's like a little forest of felled basil trees. And should I say my second question?
Well, do you guys want to dig into that one first? Or
unless the second question is related to the first question.
Yeah.
It's not related.
Okay. Let's start with number one here. What are your thoughts, gardeners? What do we think?
Yeah, so they're actually cutting the main stem of the basil. It's not that they're just eating the leaves.
Nothing's being eaten.
Just taking them down and leaving them there.
They're just like chopping them down and leaving the remains.
That sounds to me like that might be a vole.
That's what I was going to say, a vole.
Have you looked at the stem itself, and is it cleanly cut, or is it chewed, or have you not looked at it that closely?
I think it's cleanly cut, but I doubt it's voles because my raised bed has rocks underneath it. There's no way for them to get up through the bed.
Or it might be
and
a chipmunk.
And little baby basils.
I was going to say maybe chipmunk as well. That's another one.
I was thinking grasshoppers.
No.
No, they wouldn't cut it clean like that and leave it. No.
Yeah,
so if you don't think it could be voles, then our probably next best guess would be chipmunks. And they sometimes will just come in and taste it, cut it, and leave it. And, you know, there's a lot of critters that do that.
And
I've seen deer do that, too. They come in, they sample certain things. They don't like them, and they leave them there. And it's like, oh, if you could just glue that back on, it'd be great. But you can't.
Yeah, and especially with rocks around, that is a great hiding area for chipmunks. And right now, there are loads of chipmunks out there.
Okay,
there are.
With that in mind, Jane, let's move to question number two. Is this about Japanese beetles?
It is. Okay, so I've called you guys before. I know that milky spore is the solution. And I treated my yard last year, but I'm realizing, so my whole yard is surrounded by like an acre of ferns. And I just don't, how do you know? And they are wherever the sun is at that moment, but I just don't know where they're actually laying the grubs.
Well, they generally,
so the
grubs would be in more in the lawn area in the ground. So that's where you're going to be. And if you did milky spore, I will say that it does take a few years for it to build up in your lawn. So 1 year, generally some control, 2 or 3 years, better control. So it does get better as time goes on. And the good thing about the Japanese beetles is that it's a short-lived pest. It's not here super long, so that's the good part of it. And the grubs, of course, aren't going to hurt your plants. That's going to be more of a turf grass thing. So it's just the adults. Now, if Ray was here, he would want me to repeat this famous thing that that I've done in the past to discourage Japanese beetles, which is a concoction. Which is right, the concoction of not the wife's blender, the old blender that we have. He calls it I think he calls it the devil's blender. So if you are listening, Ray, this one's for you. But yes, you can take Japanese beetles, you can put them in a water solution, you can puree them up, and you can sprinkle them on your plants, and it does have some effect efficacy. It does sort of discourage them from continuously feeding. It has some results.
Incredible. Hey, Jane, thank you so much for your call today. We really appreciate it. Well, we're starting hot today. We got stubs, grubs, and bugs. Is that fair to say?
That's definitely fair to say.
Exactly. Yep.
The full roster. Okay. We have another call coming in from Sally in beautiful Hinsdale, Massachusetts. Sally, you're on Vox Pop, and as I understand it, you have a cucumber question.
Yes. My cucumbers started to grow, and then they just don't get any further, which makes me think that they weren't pollinated. So I put a flowering plant in the garden to say, hey, bees, come on over here. And they're still not getting anywhere. So then I saw something about knocking the pollen out of the flowers so that you'll get fruit. Does that make any sense?
So do you know what variety of cucumbers you planted?
They're pickling cucumbers.
Okay, yeah. So it sounds more to me like there might be a nutrient issue. When cucumbers are under stress, they will not set their fruit. They get the little female flowers, and then the baby cucumbers behind the flowers, are they just kind of shriveling up and turning yellow and falling off?
They're not even turning yellow and falling off. They're just hanging there pitifully.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds to me like they may not have enough nitrogen. Cucumbers are actually very heavy feeders to keep them producing.
Okay.
They also...
I've been feeding it, and everything else in the garden is, like, thriving.
Huh. All right. You're working on stumping
it's
me
a
here.
Bed.
Yeah.
I'm so disappointed.
What's your water situation? How often are they getting watered?
Well, I keep an eye on it. We've had a lot of rain, so it's not always me, but I do keep it watered, and I feed it even once a week.
Yeah, because I do wonder about the water level, because what seems like a lot of rain often actually, especially in a raised bed, doesn't go very far. So like yesterday, we got a quarter inch of rain in 5 minutes. With it coming down that hard, a lot of that runs off, and that quarter inch of rain was already gone in my outdoor potted plants in the afternoon. So I think adding, if you have some drip irrigation and watering them maybe 15 or 20 minutes a day through drip irrigation, that might help you out.
I honestly don't think water's the problem, because this raised bed, it actually doesn't drain as well as I'd like, so it does stay moist for a few days.
Do the plants look really healthy? That look a really healthy looking plant.
Yeah.
So a lot of vegetative, really good green growth.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all really good in that sense. I'm wondering if it's almost. You said you have been feeding them regularly. What have you been feeding them with? Like what kind of a composition with that fertilizer?
I forget what the formula is, but it's called Jax.
Yeah. Do you any idea what the analysis is? And I know Jax fertilizers. I've used them. So is it like
I'm
a high nitrogen?
At the moment, so I couldn't tell you.
All right. Sometimes too much nitrogen can, and now I'm starting to wonder if that might be it. So look at the analysis when you get back home, and if what you want is more of a balanced set of numbers, especially the top three. So the NPK, we want those to be kind of balanced. If it's a little bit variation, it's fine. But what we don't want to see, and some fertilizers are like that, is like a 30 5-5. That would be a very high base nitrogen. And the plants are going to need phosphorus and potassium, as well as a bunch of micronutrients to kick in and start to produce fruit.
So what's the ideal for the cucumber?
You know, it could be a lot of different things, but I just like balance. So, you know, like a 20-20-20, a 10-10-10. It depends on, like, if it's organic or whether it's a soluble. But balance with with micronutrients is the key, I think, when you're looking at, you know, vegetable production. So it might just be a high nitrogen-based fertilizer, getting too much of nitrogen. Are you also adding compost and stuff to it?
It's a very composted soil in there, yes. And I also have chickens, so I always put a little of that in there at the start.
So it might be too much. I'm starting to think too much nitrogen, not enough phosphorus, potassium, and that might be the solution. So start going towards balance. I remember years ago I planted some squash. It was in a really rotted down organic old manure pile, and they grew like the it was unbelievable vines. I mean, we're talking like 30 champion vines, 30 feet, you know, long, crazy vines, very little fruit, very little vegetables produced
on
those squash.
That's what happened when I tried to grow squash also.
Yeah, so starting to think we got a theme here. So probably a little bit too much nitrogen, start focusing on potassium and phosphorus.
Okay. My only other thing is, please tell me how to get rid of the mole or vole that is just tunneling everywhere in my yard.
Well, Dale Isle has got the patented vole removal technique, so I'll let her take that one.
Yeah, so voles like to run along edges. So what we do is we'll use like a 4-inch diameter piece of PVC pipe that is anywhere from 4 to 8 feet long. Put that in an area where you see them running, you know, along the side of a raised bed, etc. And just put some set mouse traps, one in each end. And since they like to run through these dark places where they feel like they're safe, they wind up running right over the mouse trap and snap.
And you don't even put bait on them, right?
No, we don't.
Don't even need to bait them.
Amazing. Sally, thank you so much for your call today. Wow, a villainous vole, a cucumber conundrum. We're solving all the problems today here on Vox Pop. You can call in to learn from Fred and Delilah about all your gardening questions by calling 1-800-348-2551. That number again, 1-800-348-2551. And we'll get some emails in the next segment. You too can join the fun at voxpop@wamc.org. Let's take some underwriting, then we'll get back to Vox Pop in just a moment. Stay tuned. Hello and welcome back to Vox Pop. It's WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Josh Landes. We have Fred Breglia, director of the Landes Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Delilah Riggs, owner and operator of the Berry Patch. We're taking your questions about gardening today. So we got a question about blueberry bushes, which makes sense. It's mid-July, the perfect time for this. Bill asks, I have two questions. One, my blueberry bushes, the ends are turning brown and dying. He's getting fruit. He doesn't know if it's a water issue or if he needs more fertilizer. Some of the leaves are turning yellow. What do you guys get out of that? What are you hearing about these color reports from this gentleman's blueberry bush?
Yeah, so if it makes you feel any better, Bill, I have some of the same going on in my blueberry planting where the leaves on the ends of some of the tips are turning brown. I haven't quite figured out exactly what's going on, but I suspect that, you know, we've had a lot of variable temperatures, and we've had a lot of really high temperatures. And on some of those hot days, I think the plants were probably not able to move enough water into that new growth at the ends of the plants. I just snip off the brown leaves at the ends. The rest of the plant is fine. And there is a disease called phimopsis that can cause sudden death of some of the blueberry tips of plants. And so you might want to look a little further down the cane and see if you see any cankers or anything like that. A canker is like an area on the stem where you can see usually like a split or a longitudinal split. It's an actual disease. So look further down the canes and see if that might be part of the issue as well. The yellow leaves, that sounds like your pH is not low enough. Blueberries need a really acid soil, and if it's not acid enough, you'll get an iron deficiency because the plants can't take up enough iron. So do a soil test and see what the pH is looking like, and you might need to add some sulfur to get the pH lower again.
Yeah, the cankers are, they're sort of, if it was a human being, it would be like kind of a lesion. If you think of, if you think of a, an injury like a lesion, that's kind of like what a canker looks like on a plant. Similar to that. And I agree with the pH. It's probably pH more than it is anything else. You can have all the fertility in the soil and the plant can't use it if the pH is wrong. The pH locks it up, makes it unavailable.
Oh, fantastic. Bill, I hope somewhere out there your blueberry bushes are about to bloom into the exact hues, colors, and shapes you're looking for. Listen, being in public radio is hard. It's a hard job. And some days you have to taste test blueberries grown by one of our guests. And it's work that I'm willing to do. I just want to make that very clear.
You have to make sacrifices sometimes,
it's
Josh.
Tough. Okay, so, Delilah, on the subject of blueberries, in front of us on the celebrated WAMC Studio A desk, I am seeing an incredible array of blueberries. Walk me through. What are we looking at here?
Okay, so last time I was in, I brought in five varieties of blueberries that were our early season blueberries. Now we're into mid-season blueberries, and so I brought in five different varieties to, for everyone to taste test, starting with Blue Ray, and I'm doing these kind of in order of ripening. So Blue Ray, which is one of my favorite varieties and is really an adaptable variety for a lot of home gardeners. It's a great one for home gardeners to grow.
Can we call it Blue Josh just for today?
Sure.
Okay. Excellent.
Yeah, although maybe Blue Jay might be better to be the one that we call it Blue Josh.
You got moves, Delilah.
Yeah. So we go from Blue Ray to then Toro, which is a more difficult one to grow, not quite as good for home gardeners to grow, a little harder to find as well. Blue Crop, a great standard, again, a really great one for home gardeners to be growing. Blue Jay, which is a very tall bush. Our bushes are like 9.5 feet tall.
Wow.
A little more tart in flavor for people that like a tartar blueberry. And then Nelson, which is a really nice one. It's been around 25, 30 years or so. Really nice size, great flavor. Sometimes a little tart, but this year they seem to be pretty sweet.
Wow.
Yeah.
So to ask the most basic question, if you were like going to direct someone to one of these bushes to get your like first blueberry of the summer or of this wave of blueberries, what do you think is a good introductory blueberry from the five we're looking at?
I would say Blue Ray and Blue Crop.
My mouth is watering.
Yeah. Just because they're really solid producers.
Okay, so I'm going to try a Blue Ray. Okay.
Yes, absolutely. And while you're grabbing one of those Blue Rays, I see a Blue Ray that actually has a stem still on it. So I wanted to talk a little bit about how people can tell when a blue blueberry is actually ripe versus when it's not quite ripe. And for people in their home garden, they're always, if they're like, okay, why are these things tart? So when a blueberry is truly ripe, at the bottom of the stem, that is where it attaches to the berry, you will actually get a blue ring on the green stem itself. And that is the best indicator you have that that blueberry has achieved full ripeness. When it's not there, it might still be a little more tart.
So my immediate reaction to the Blue Ray, and Fred, I want your take as well.
Absolutely.
It's bright. It has like a creamy, jammy quality. It's just like, it's like kind of bursting. It's like got a really, really sweet, lovely.
It is. It's definitely very sweet in a really good way. It is probably one of my favorites that I've tried over the years. It's a solid producer, and it sounds like a relatively easy going for, new gardeners to try. So it's a win-win on that one.
Visually, this sort of looks like when you think of a blueberry, boy, that looks just like a perfect plump.
It does look like the perfect picture blueberry.
So yep. As far as using Blu-ray, like, is this a pie blueberry, a snack one? How do you think of it being used?
I like my blueberries just fresh out of hand, but they also make awesome pies and amazing crisps. And there's no bad way to use a blueberry, in my opinion.
Now, the blueberry skin carries so much of the flavor. Like, that aftertaste that I'm getting is like such a, you know, classic blueberry flavor. Can you talk to us about that? Like, how are flavors distributed in the structure?
That's probably getting a little more into the physiology than what I'm prepared to talk about today. That would take a little bit more research. But they can taste very different from each other, even though they are all blue. And you know, normally these look a lot different from each other. They're different size. Some are dark blue, some are light blue. And I picked these this morning and my husband looked at them and said, They all look exactly the same.
Yeah, from a visual, you really, they all look like classic blueberries.
Yes, they all
almost
do.
Almost all the same size. I know you can't see it on the radio, but
Toro's usually a little bit lighter, kind of powder blue, and the Blu-ray is often a darker blue, and they're not that way this year, so I'm not totally sure. But, you know, just people are like, gee, I didn't know there were different varieties of blueberries. And I always talk about, whether it be blueberries or strawberries or raspberries or whatever, just like apples, people are used to different varieties of apples and they all taste very different from each other. A Granny Smith is very different than a Red Delicious, which is different than a Macallan. Blueberries, strawberries, raspberries are all the same, that they will all taste very different from each other. And like the Blue Jays tend to be, to me at least, usually seem more tart.
Yeah, and you can notice a difference between the Toro and the Blue Ray. Yeah,
the Toro
sure.
has a bit of a bite to it.
Has a bit more of a bite.
Yeah.
And Classic definitely more sweet with that Blue Ray for
yeah.
me.
Yeah. Huh.
A win-win, though, here so far.
Yeah, absolutely. The balance in the Toro is kind of nice.
It is.
Like a full suite of the Blu-ray. So as far as, like, you know, the different conditions for these, do they broadly need the same things, or does each sort of kind of blueberry require different care?
No, they all, you know, they're all planted right beside each other. Same cultural practices. You need a low pH. You need an acid soil. They like lots of water. They like to be fertilized twice in the spring, once when the buds very first start to come out, and then once at the end of bloom. They all need bumblebees for pollination, do the best job. So growing wise, it's all the same. It's just these little differences in genetics. That
what pH different. Are you running on these for the most part?
So we tend to be at
like five and
between 4.7 and 5.3.
Okay. So yeah. Even into the high fours.
Yep.
So the blue crop, even tartar, I think, it's moving farther away from the blue ray for sure.
Yep.
Again, it's like really bright and acidic. It's really like, gets right in the tongue.
Mm-mm.
It's delicious.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's Blue Jay and Nelson.
I like Nelson. It's sort of like a less formal one. You know what I mean?
Right, and that's okay. The oldest variety, the Nelson, huh?
No, Blue Crop's the oldest of these.
Oh, Blue Crop.
Yeah. Nelson's been around about 30 years. Blue Crop and Blue Ray have been around even longer.
Okay. Blue Jay just leapt to the top of my rankings. That is
okay.
A remarkable blueberry.
So for what reason?
That's a great question. It has this like juicy quality to it. I feel like if you just smushed it in your hand, you would get this like incredible like juice, this nectar of blueberry out of it. It's got a little sharpness to it, but it's sort of like, it's like, I want to say dry, more like a drier flavor. Like the Blu-ray is more like creamy, jammy. This, I feel like, is like the perfect balance where it's a little tart.
A little bit
really
of tartness
sweet.
To that
yeah.
one.
Yeah. It's delicious.
It. Yeah. And again, I mean, it will vary from berry to berry, depending on if it's, they tend to be sweeter if they come from the top of the bush versus if they're down low and under leaves more. They don't get quite as sweet based on the location in the plant. But yeah, the Blue Jay is really nice.
It's like a fully rounded flavor, I feel like. It's like, I found that maybe the Toro would be like a little drier, like I said. The Blue Crop, a little tartar. The Blue Jay, I'm getting this really nice, well-rounded blueberry flavor.
Yep.
Wow. Okay, I'm going to move on to the finale, the grand finale, the Nelson Berry. And we're torturing our listeners right now because they're like, I want to eat these
really
blueberries.
We really
are. Yeah. But you know what? Again, this is the risk you take in broadcasting. Mmm. Really tart on the Nelson. That's a tart berry.
Yes.
Wow.
The tartest
even,
of the bunch.
Even though when they're ripe, they're still pretty tart.
That's quite tart. That's like not kidding around.
Definitely.
So I would say for beginners, maybe don't start with the Nelson. Work your way up to the Nelson.
Yeah. And these would be great in a pie.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can see that.
I think.
Could get the,
pie,
that,
crisp.
That intense flavor so the sugar really sort of softens it a little bit and
exactly.
still stays
yep.
alive.
Yep. Even yep. though they look the same, they don't taste the same.
Yeah, it's really incredible.
Yep, it is. When you have the side-by-side comparison, you can really see it.
It's such a shame, I think, in our culture that so often blueberry gets reduced to this monolithic concept.
It does.
Just the sheer breadth of it right now is like kind of mind-blowing.
Very cool.
So as far as trends and how this, I know like in Massachusetts where I'm from, a lot of drought conditions. It's been a hot, dry summer for us. Thank God a little rain lately. What's affecting this year's crop of blueberries as far as like the general climate?
It's those variable temperatures, that really hot and then cooling down and then really hot. And to me right now, this weekend is absolutely premier blueberry weather. It's warm days without getting too hot.
And then a little bit of that coolness in the evening.
It's cool nights. We're getting down into the 40s in Steventown. That's what gives you the best sugar content
yep.
in any type of fruit. We have irrigation, so the drought doesn't affect us at all. We've actually been irrigating them for a month now. And blueberries do like lots of moisture. You know, in the native environment, you find them around bogs and in moist soils, so they don't like to get dry.
Yep. I've been found around bogs as well. I'm drawn to them. I don't know. Okay, let's take another call here. We've got a call coming in, Karen in Loudonville. Karen, you have a problem with moldy peonies. Talk to us. What's happening?
My peonies were beautiful this year. And now they're all getting gray and fuzzy, the leaves.
Yep, so that's powdery mildew, and it's pretty common. The good news is it doesn't really affect the health of the plant, per se. So you're not going to want to do too much with those. There's not much you can do right now to get rid of it because it's there. And it's still staying pretty green colored other than the fuzziness to it, I'm assuming. Still pretty green, right? Not
underneath they're green, but they look like they need a good dusting.
They do, yeah. And, you know, sometimes, you know, again, it's there, so it's like one of these things that's hard to get rid of when it's there. But sometimes actually just blasting it with water, like an overhead irrigation, it's sometimes, this is one of those things, powdery mildew and most of the moles and funguses that we deal with tend to like wet weather. And with powdery mildew, sometimes when you have forceful rain, it washes a lot of that off the leaves. So sometimes when you have, and I don't know if it's been dry where you are, but it's been drier by us with occasionally getting some intermittent rain, which has been helping our situation at Landis Arboretum. But getting a hose and just, you know, contrary to what we normally say, in the morning, just kind of spraying off the plants, it's going to wash a lot of those spores off, and it might help to reduce the amount of powdery mildew you have. In the end, it's not going to hurt the plant. Don't cut them back until, you know, we're talking the end of the summer when they really start to turn yellow. And you don't need to compost that stuff if you want to kind of try to get rid of it. But in general, not going to hurt the plant. And some forceful kind of watering with a hose could actually help to get rid of some of those spores.
And it is the time of year where powdery mildew is showing up on everything.
It is.
The bee balm is covered. The lupins are getting powdery mildew. Peonies are.
I'm seeing it even on lilac a little bit.
Yeah. Dandelions have had powdery mildew for about a month now. Yep. So so actually, powdery mildew is kind of interesting in the way it's different. Most fungi need free water to germinate. And powdery mildew actually only needs 80% relative humidity for the spores to germinate.
Yep.
And then it actually can take off even more with dry weather.
Yep.
So that's where, you know, washing off these spores will be good because it's one fungus that does not like super saturated conditions as much.
Yep.
But it is one of those diseases we're going to have. And like Fred said, it's really not going to hurt the plant much. Nothing looks perfect over the summer. And powdery mildew is going to be going after a lot of plants for the next 2 months.
Yep, and on the bright side, you got through a really good bloom with them, so the plants are doing good in that sense. You know, and I am seeing less fungal issues across the board, actually, which is nice to see. Like the lilacs we've been talking about for the past, and that, you know, knock on wood here that we say it today, but I haven't seen much of the lilac blight that we've seen the last handful of years. That's been really defoliating and making all the lilacs look really bad. So far, things are looking pretty good. And,
yeah, we had a much drier spring, so the inoculum didn't have the right conditions to germinate.
Yep, and that's exactly it. You know, a lot of people think wet summer, but really it's wet spring. It ramps up all these diseases. And then once they're on the leaves, people say, well, you know, it hasn't even been raining that much. How are we getting the... Well, it actually happened in the spring when it was really wet. And then all it really needs is once it's ramped up, it just needs humidity. And we certainly have humidity, even if we don't have rain. So knock on wood, we keep seeing this trend, you know, continue. Not too many bad problems right now.
All right, Karen, thank you so much. Oh, one more question, Karen?
I just want to, it's Carol, but anyway, it doesn't have to do with the amount of sunlight then.
Well, sunlight's
the shadier ones are...
Yeah, sunlight can be a factor, but I think we're talking more humidity-based than we are probably sunlight right now with that.
Excellent. Well, hey, Karen, thank you for your... Carol, excuse me. the great Carol for her call. There's something Lovecraftian about this things you guys do. You're battling molds. You know what I mean? That feels very like a fantasy novel or something.
It is pretty wild. You know, we battle funguses and molds, but, you know, there are also a ton of funguses that are all symbiotic and helping at the same time. So, you know, a lot of the fungi out there are really beneficial and doing a real lot in terms of keeping trees and plants healthy. They're inoculating root systems. They're expanding root systems. They're actually going for resources like water and nutrients that plants need. They're bringing them to plants, and they're getting an increased growth, not because you dumped a bunch of fertilizer, because the more the nutrients and water that the fungi give the plant, the more the plant's happy, the more it photosynthesizes, and the more secretions of carbohydrates that it feeds that fungi. So it's, you know, complete symbiosis in that sense. Sometimes they're bad, but more times than not, I think they're good. It's like insects. You know, the vast majority of all insects are either beneficial or neutral. Very few bad ones, but those bad ones, boy, they do cause a lot of mayhem.
Are you seeing that in the berry patch at all, as far as like what you're trying to encourage in this beautiful symbiotic web of nature?
Well, certainly the wood chips that we add every year, we have just this fantastic root environment for our blueberries. And I think that always shows up in the sheer amount of blueberries that we get out of a small area. Insect-wise, we actually don't have any issues because we surround our entire planting with a fine mesh netting that excludes an invasive insect called spotted-winged Drosophila, which is the reason we put up the netting, but it also excludes a bunch of other insects. So when people come to do picking at our place, they always comment about, gee, there's no mosquitoes, there's no black flies, there's no nothing.
But there are beneficials trapped in there.
Yes, there are.
That's amazing. Well, listen, I want to just let the listeners know I'm doing my part to help deplete your stock of blueberries. Those blue jays are blowing my mind.
Excellent.
But listen, folks, we've got to take an underwriting break, so we'll go ahead, get that going. And again, if you want to get on Vox Pop, we have some calls to get to already, but 1-800-348-2551. That's 1-800-348-2551. Fred Breglia, Delilah Riggs, two gardening experts here sharing their craft and wisdom. You can also email voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to Vox Pop. It's WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Josh Landes. We've got Fred Breglia, Delilah Riggs, two gardening wizards, if you will. Fred is the director of the Landes Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Delilah is the owner and operator of the Berry Patch, who currently is absolutely flexing on us with this incredible array of blueberries we have in studio. A first-generation diversified farm in beautiful Steventown, New York. Let's go back to our calls. All right. Peter in Stuyvesant, we're going to go to you now. You are having trouble with pokeweed, Peter. Tell us about your pokeweed problem.
Can't get rid of it. Deep roots, sprouts like crazy. What can I do to kill it effectively?
Yep. So first I will say with pokeweed is that in America, pokeweed is generally considered a weed, but in other countries it's considered an ornamental. So, and at the Arboretum, if you came to visit us, you'll see pokeweed in our perennial gardens. We always leave a few in there. They come up on their own, and we leave them alone. If you want to get rid of it, though, sort of digging up that root would certainly get rid of it. You can use loppers, kind of, because it gets real woody. You can cut that down. You could cover the area that where the sprouts are going to grow from with just a little piece of either weed fabric or black plastic. Anchor it down with some rocks, and the pokeweed will go away. I mean, compared to so many other things that we battle in terms of weeds, pokeweed is a relatively easy one to get rid of. And if it's in a spot where you can let it grow, I do encourage people to let that one grow because it turns into a really big ornamental, and it gets these really cool purple berries that are definitely attractive to look at, in my opinion. You want to add to that, Dale?
Yeah, certainly. We have some pokeweed that pokes through the mulch in our blueberries every now and then, and we go out there with a shovel and dig it out as much as we can, and then we do exactly that. We have weed mat, and we put it over that spot, and that tends to take care of it. Just make sure if it's in an area where you don't want it to proliferate, that you don't let those berries form.
Yeah.
Because that's where you start to get your seedlings from. So dig out what you can, cover up that area with a dark weed mat, and keep at it for several years. It won't be a one-year thing. But
how about cutting it down to ground level? It's a hollow stem, and applying an herbicide to it.
It's one of those things that you can control quite easily without using any kind of herbicide. Again, just cutting it and putting a piece of black plastic. I wish a lot of other weeds were as easy to deal with that one. It's kind of straightforward if you just cut it down, cover it with plastic. But like Isla said, the berries, we do leave them on for a bit, but we don't let them really get completely finished ripening and drop. We do cut those seed heads off. The amount of pokeweed we get
now, they're still green. They haven't gone to
You could cut them off right now. I mean, if you're cutting the plant down, though, you're taking the whole thing out and then, just cover that spot. And I think you're going to be in pretty good shape. Keep after it. You'll win. That's one that you can win pretty easily on.
Well, hey, Peter, thank you for that call. All right, gardening experts. We're now going to turn to an email that I think is pretty interesting.
Okay.
Jess and Karen have a question about their young black tupelo tree. Every year around this time of year, a patch of about 10 to 15 leaves turn its autumn color of fiery red and orange. After a few weeks, they fall off, and come autumn, the whole tree then turns those beautiful colors. Is this normal, or is something wrong with my tree?
The one thing that I love about tupelo is that it has my favorite fall colors. So there's no doubt about it. That fiery red is hard to beat. It really is. You'll see a branch or two just turn a little bit of off color, like early fall color, I should say. And it's not abnormal. There's some stresses in the environment. So a lot of times premature fall color does indicate a little bit of stress. But if it's a healthy looking plant, I wouldn't be overly concerned. If you're starting to see a decline in vigor, that's a completely different problem. And then
Let me ask about that tree vigor. Can you describe that for me?
Yeah, so think of vitality with humans. So there's a lot of analogies between plants and people, a lot of similarities, a lot of differences. But one of them is if you can, you basically are healthy. You're not looking weak. You don't have thin foliage, not you, Josh, but not the plants. So it looks just generally healthy, no stress. With a tree, we like to see the top of the tree looking really healthy. And sometimes the bottom of the tree, especially on older trees, it's normal to have some dead branches or some, decline to some degree, especially older plants. Younger trees, we generally like to see good, vitality through the whole plant. But if that top of that tree is not showing full vigor and you're seeing more vigorous plants or foliage on the bottom, that's telling me, especially with a younger tree and even an older tree, that's indicating a problem. So top down decline, not normal. Some dead branches throughout the plant and the bottom kind of looking a little bit worse than the top, that is normal. But if you're seeing a top decline, that's an underlying issue. And if that's what they're seeing, they certainly could send an email over to fred@landisarboretum.org with some photos, and we might be able to diagnose it further. But it could be like a root dysfunction. There's a lot of issues with underground. That's underground that could cause problems, like girdling roots, for example. If the roots are wrapping, if it was planted as a landscape plant and you bought it in a container, or it was planted too deep, for example, both of those are going to start to create a top-down decline. If it was too deep and it's young, it's pretty easy to kind of pull mulch or soil away and get it to kind of reverse. If it has a girdling root, that root dysfunction is not easy to correct. But with tree surgery, there are things what arborists can do to kind of help mitigate that problem and keep that tree growing for many years. I've cut one girdling root off a plant years ago, and the response was like instant. It had one choking root, and it was just strangling it. And the rest of the root system looked good. It went from a declining plant to a very healthy plant that I would say almost has too much vigor.
Gotcha.
It took right off. So,
okay. Well, we're going to go to a call now. We've got Chelsea calling in from Troy. Chelsea, welcome to Vox Pop. You're on with me, Fred, and Delilah. Talk to us about your cherry tree. What is afoot in Troy with your cherry tree?
Thank you so much for taking my call. It's actually a choke cherry tree.
Ah, okay.
This thing popped up about, honestly, 12, 15 years ago. Started out small. My partner, who has been in the house that long, he was like, let's let it grow. And now it has pretty much overtaken an entire portion of our yard with like little sprouts coming up. It is a full sprouting, flowering tree. It's even encroaching to my neighbor's property, and we just cannot keep it back. Do you have any tips, tricks, or hints?
Yeah, so chokecherry is another. It's a good native. It's you know what you're describing is what it's going to do in the wild. It produces a lot of berries. It starts to produce a lot of seedlings, and it's trying to create a number of these plants in a thicket. And they have nice flowers, and they're a nice tree. And like I said, it's a native. It's a great plant. But getting rid of so you have a lot of baby trees popping up. Is that what the main problem is?
They're all over, and the main concern that I honestly have, I would leave it, but the birds love to eat the berries, and then unfortunately my dog loves to eat everything else, the seeds, which are not good for her.
Okay. So digging out those seedlings, just persistently digging out those seedlings is going to help. You could temporarily, after you dig them out, or you could even use a weed whacker and just kind of mow them all down if they're really young. And you could use, now I don't like to use landscape fabric for anything except for the most part, smothering things or underneath driveways, underneath like patios. But it has applications. So in a short-term use, you could use landscape fabric, weed fabric. You mow them all down. You put landscape fabric around your tree and around the area where all these little babies are growing. And what's good about the landscape fabric is it lets water. And you could use some rocks. You don't have to mulch this all in. Just use some rocks to kind of pin it all down around the edge so no light can get in. And then, of course, cut out the part around the main tree that you want to keep. And what's good about it is that it lets water and air exchange with the soil. So the water and the rain goes in, no problem. And then the roots are respiring, so there's an air exchange. They're taking oxygen in, opposite of photosynthesis.
Delilah, it sounds like you usually want to chime in here.
I was just wondering, so do you want to keep that original tree, I guess is my question. I wasn't sure, based on your comment about your dog, et cetera, if you want to keep that main tree.
That's a good question. I took it as you did.
I mean, ideally, I would love, because it's just, I know that's going to keep doing this, I think that I would rather get rid of it and replace it with another tree. But at this point, it's so big, I would need to have somebody else come in and cut it down.
So yeah, so that would,
I can at least stop the extra growth.
Okay. So, I mean, you could do what we call reduction pruning. So if you go to a free website put out by the International Society of Arboriculture, it'll explain this in more detail. But treesaregood.org is the website. And it's free. It's a consumer-based website, tons of information, and it's based on research. So you could do reduction pruning to make it smaller. But if you want to get rid of it, straightforward. I mean, it's just, you don't even have to grind a stump out unless you really want to plant in that exact same spot. Otherwise, what we do at the Arboretum often is we dig around the stumps and we cut it kind of at grade or just slightly below grade. And then the next plant, next tree would go a few feet, 2 or 3 feet on one side or the other. And then you will have to cut some of those roots as you do that. And that would be an easy one. So you cut the tree out. If you can get the stump down to grade, and then the same thing with the weed fabric. You mow off all the babies, cover the area for a month, and then start thinking about what you would like to plant in the fall. And the fall would be a really good time to install some plants. So cut the tree down now, put the weed fabric down now, and then I would say, start looking at trees that you want. Do some research. Check with garden centers. Put the right plant in the right spot. You're not going to have a problem. A lot of times, just wrong, a good plant like the one you're talking about, maybe just in the wrong spot. So then it becomes a problem. So just research what you want to replace it with.
We want to definitely thank Chelsea for calling in. That's definitely interesting. The choke cherry tree, we've got some good responses there. Yeah. Okay, so Delilah, this next call from David in Newburgh is right up your alley. I want to make sure we get to this. Given the theme of today's episode, we have David from Newburgh. David, blueberries and squirrels issues. Talk to us. What is going on?
Yes. Before I get to the blueberries, I just wanted to offer a comment for the woman who is having trouble with the powdery mildew with the peonies. I had that same issue a few years ago, and what I've done that's really effective is I make sure after they bloom, I cut the back, not all the way, but I cut them back so there's enough air circulating among them, and I haven't had powdery mildew since that time. So maybe that will work for her. Anyway, with the blueberries, first I was battling birds, and I covered them with netting, but they were getting caught in the netting, and then I discovered tulle, and I put tulle around them, anchored, it helped the birds, but what happened was the squirrels were getting in. First, they were getting in underneath it, so I anchored it more securely. Now, this year, they're just climbing up on the tool and scratching through it and getting in that way. So I heard, I don't know if it was Delilah who mentioned that there was this mesh that she has that maybe would be high enough quality that it would prevent squirrels from clawing through it?
Yes. The only thing we've had get through this netting is at ground level, some voles will occasionally chew through it. Or one time we had a mama rabbit whose babies were inside, and she made sure she chewed through that to get into her babies. But it is a very durable netting. And if you wanted to email me at theberrypatchny@gmail.com, I can tell you more about it.
Great. That would really be helpful. So it's a great show. I listen to you guys every 2 weeks, and I learn so much. So anyway, I hope that might help. And I will do that, Delilah, and also pass on that information to the woman with the peonies, because it won't help her right now, but it might help her in the future.
Yep. All right, David, hey, thank you so much. Hey, the Garden Gang is in effect. The fans are here. The Delilah and Fred heads, they are out there. We love hearing from them. Okay, so I wanted to ask you, we got a question from John Smith. This is just a great question. The subject line is, bears, help.
Okay.
I asked the panel last year about help in preventing bears from destroying my six-year-old apple trees.
Yep.
The panel suggested an electric fence. However, I've had a lot of difficulty in finding an electric fence that will not break the bank and that will prevent bears from entering. Do you have any suggestions for a suitable fence, I suppose, or deterrence mechanism for 26 trees, 500 feet long, and here's the kicker, hopefully not too much more than $500.
Yeah, so, I mean, I do remember this call. So we talked about it, and we have said fencing. And electric fencing is a good one. And, you know, I guess a simple strand of electric fencing at the right kind of placement would probably suffice to deter the bear. I mean, it's not a really – generally speaking, electric fencing is not super expensive. But yeah. I haven't bought any in a long time, so things have nothing but gone up over the years.
Yeah, I wonder also, I mean, if you're using a solar charger, that would probably up the price versus if you can actually run power out to it from someplace.
Good point.
That may be an alternative. But from what I've seen, you know, what I look at is what the beekeepers do, and the beekeepers all put up electric fences.
They do.
So I will say that the netting that we have around our blueberry planting actually last year prevented a bear from getting into our blueberry planting.
Wow.
It got one hole, and we found the claw marks, and we found the indentation where it had stood up against the netting, but it never got through.
It didn't want to challenge it. Wow.
Right.
Wow, it actually stopped a bear.
That's amazing.
That's pretty cool.
It was amazing.
I don't think we're recommending this for you, though.
No.
Okay.
No.
Well, let me put this to you guys as experts. Let's say I assemble my own sort of suit of armor that I've crafted from odds and ends around my house. I get like a large quarter staff or something like that and sort of stand guard for the bears around the apple trees.
I think you'd do better at the Renaissance Festival.
The other thing that does help with an electric fence is if you use some aluminum foil with peanut butter on it, and that attracts them, and their wet nose hits the electric fence and makes sure that they get a good zap.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes an investment like that, I know it can be pricey. And I, again, you know, haven't, you know, if you have certain trees that seem to be bigger, taller, less prone to the bear, you might be at a selectively fence less of them and still have control. And if they did get zapped on one of the trees, I tend to think they would almost like leave the area. So I know sometimes those investments are tricky to spring for, but I think long term you're guaranteeing yourself a pretty solid situation without the bears giving you a hard time.
Yeah. I'm a little concerned because I find the smell of peanut butter irresistible.
Agreed.
So I could get shocked. I'm worried.
You could, except I don't think you have a wet nose.
Not right now, but it's happened. Well, listen, we are getting to the end of the show. I cannot thank enough the incredible Fred Breglia and the delightful Delilah Riggs for joining us on this. Listen, we got so sorry to everyone who called who couldn't get to or everyone who emailed. You guys poured them on today. We had a great conversation. Voles, honey, blueberries, Tupelo. Tupelo Honey, great record by Van Morrison.
Hey, it's a good
That's
one.
That's true.
Unrelated for now, though. We'll get to that next time, Fred, I promise. Okay. Huge thanks to Fred and Delilah. I just want to say support for the show today came from Open Door Bookstore and Gift Gallery, featuring books, jewelry, personal and home accessories, supporting local artisans and artisans from around the world. OpenDoor-Bookstore.com. And Metroland Now, a Capital Region source for arts and entertainment, available in print and online. For pickup, locations, distribution, and advertising opportunities, TheMetroland.com. Thanks again for joining us on Vox Pop. Our engineer today is trainee Emily, who did a fantastic job under the watchful guidance of the grizzled vet, Mike Bowen. Thank you so much. We had calls today by, Delilah, remind me?
Susie Checkeye.
Thank you so much, Susie. An excellent job. Again, a horde of callers handled very well. I'm Josh Landes, not Ray Graff, though he shall return at some point. Tomorrow, Aaron Shell Levine hosts the show for Food Friday, and we got kind of a big one, folks, ice cream with Julian Hom and Megan Kitsock. That's tomorrow at 2. You out there in listening land, in radio land, you're going to stay tuned now for the Capital Connection. You're listening to WAMC. We love you so much. Stay tuned and go eat some blueberries.